fish, 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 fish. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fish. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
You know, I gotta tell you, I'm sitting there listening to that song, thinking back. I heard that song the first time in 1985, and we used it on a radio ad and later TV ads, and I've been using it on radio shows and stuff. And I enjoy it just as much today as I did the first time I heard it back in 1985. Anyway, Fish and Frank here. This is This Week in Fishing, or whatever name you want to call it.
Wait, this show has a name?
We're pretty sure, but we're not positive. It's had like six names so far, but I think we'll stick with that one. Maybe. Until next week, we'll figure it out. But Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and in the command and control, golden, glinted, chrome towers of power, RJ up there, and looking down on the minions, wondering, how did I get stuck with these guys? Anyway, lots of stuff going on fishing-wise in the world. We've got... What the heck does that say after snook? What did you write there?
Afternoon.
Oh, I could have. I thought it said Alderaan or something. I was like, how did? That's afternoon, huh?
Well, you're driving. I'm listening. I'm thinking, and I'm blind, so I might as well.
I'm driving. You're not paying attention.
I need crayons.
You need what?
Crayons.
Crayons.
Yeah,
that would do. Yeah, we could do that. As you all know, we talk about the show on the way up as we drive from Port Charlotte to the super secret location in an undisclosed town up here in Northport, just south of the golf cart place, you know, in the yellow building. But we can't talk about that. Cold water is the big thing right now. We've got most of our bite. And this is the cool thing. If you're up north and you're listening or you just got down here, the best thing about fishing in Florida in the wintertime like this, and yes, this is winter. I know it's 70 degrees out, and it's so cold, humans can't hardly survive. I mean, it's 70, for God's sakes. Is that you don't have to wake up early. You can get up, relax, go to your favorite breakfast joint, you know, get your stuff together, head out in the water, and by 11, 12, 1 o'clock, the fish are going to start biting, and you're going to have a really good day. Now, if you get out there at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, you're going to freeze, and you're not going to catch any fish till 11, 12, 1 o'clock. So it makes more sense to relax and enjoy the Florida lifestyle, you know? Kick back, chill a little bit.
Literally.
Yeah. Chill a little bit. It's pretty easy that way.
Well, people don't realize that fish are cold-blooded animals, and there's some species of our fish that do like it cooler but not cold.
And I'm going to say it's his first cold of the year.
Yes.
If it stays like this till January, the fish are going to be more active more of the day. They're going to be acclimated more to this chilly temperatures. And just like us, when this first hits, we all got jackets on. We're bundled up. And today, you know, we put our jackets on because, oh, it's going to be, and we all took them off. It's already acclimating to the weather. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the fish have to do. I think it's more allowing them to acclimate to it, with the exception of the snook.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly it. But as it warms up all day, they bask in the shallows and warm up in the suns if it's not overcast or anything like that. But I think one thing that our northern visitors forget, cold is absolutely relative to where you're at and not where you're from.
Right. It doesn't matter if this is hot in Minnesota.
Right.
Or Wisconsin or Michigan or Maine or whatever. It's cold for here, and it's cold for the fish here.
Right.
So give them time to acclimate. This is our first couple weeks of, you know, it's been hot and it's been cold and it's been hot and it's been cold. But now we've got actual chilly days, and the overcast today is what's going to drive those water temperatures down overnight in the shallow waters. We don't have a lot of tidal flow here. We only exchange about 2 feet of water a day. Not a lot of water moving in, not a lot of water moving out. And one of the weird things is people are seeing dead fish from red tide. And Robert, how long after a fish dies would you say it would start to float? When a fish dies, they go to the bottom and sink.
Yeah.
They don't die and sit at the top.
No, not usually right away. Realistically, with the water temperatures here, a day to a day and a half.
Now, RJ, you're a diver. You've seen live fish, dead fish. What, day and a half?
Yeah, it's probably about right. What happens is you got decomposition in the swim bladder and in the stomach and intestines. It turns into gas. And that's why they go belly up. You know, the old idea of your fish being belly up. It's the gases that form in that part of the fish takes them up to the top. And so that's what you're seeing. So that takes about a day, day and a half. And that depends on the temperature also. If the water's really cold, it'll take a little longer.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. You know, so, you know, when people see these dead floating fish around, they automatically assume that there's red tide in that area, and they mistake the smell of decomposing fish with, oh my gosh, red tide, and they don't realize that it's floated around. And, I mean, you know that the wind will carry those fish, but it will also carry that tide and move it from spot to spot.
So basically, I think the gist of this is just because you see dead fish doesn't mean there's red tide. That red tide could have been there 2 days ago.
Absolutely.
The only way you can tell if you're in an area that has red tide is if you start coughing.
Yeah.
End of story.
That's pretty much the best indicator, unless you're a scientist and you're doing, you know, on-site water sampling, is if your eyes are burning and your nose is burning and you're coughing, there's likely red tide, because there's very little other things at the beach that'll do that.
What's up with this table?
I like the table.
You would. I'm afraid it's going to flip over on me. I go, you know, we have a new table in the studio. I'm not thrilled. I'm like, I want my old table. I knew what that one did. This one, I feel on edge with it, you know? Studio furniture, it's a big deal for Topic here. I don't know. It's just, and Robert's like 5 feet away now, and my wife Terry's here, and she's over in the corner because she won't talk. I don't know why, but she's not want to come to the radio stage. I said, so you could sit in the booth for an hour? Okay. Hey, everybody's got their thing.
That's pretty awesome.
I'm just so handsome, she wants to bask in it.
Well, there you go.
That's what it is.
You're so cool, the sun shines on
you 24
hours a day.
I think maybe she just didn't believe you had a radio show, and she figured you were off doing something else once a week. You know,
it could be. You know, knowing me, more than possible. All right. Afternoon thing on the snook. This is a time of year, if you come down here, you're actually going to catch fish in your canals.
Yeah. Definitely.
Now, we had a young man stop in and who told me something really cool. He says, well, I'm the child of a millennium. I'm way conservative. You know, the millennials, their kids, the millennials were all this different thing. And now he says, oh, no, he doesn't want to be anything like his parents. And I was like, oh, wow, I had no idea. So he's around 18, 20, nice kid, real sharp. You know, wanting to work and do stuff, and wow, how unlike your parents,
wow.
You know. But he was asking me how to catch fish, and I was showing him a couple of different techniques. One of the easiest ways to, if you're in the canals, and November, December, January, February, March are the peak time for canal fishing. And it's pretty simple, because in the summer, the Gulf is warm, the harbor's hotter, and the canals are the hottest places. Now, you change those words, this time of year, the Gulf is cold, the harbor's a bit warmer, and the canals are the warmest. They're brown water, black bottom, solar collectors. So, during the course of the day, the canal will heat up way, way faster than you can the harbor, or the Gulf will take days to do what the canals can do in a matter of hours. So fish like to find canals that have deep water, 6 feet or more. That's deep down here. Anything 6 feet or more, and then they're going to go in those deep water holes at night. They're going to come up along the edges of the canals, probably close to, if they can find a concrete seawall.
Yeah.
Because by afternoon, that concrete absorbs the sunlight, and it's radiating heat out into the canals. So afternoon, if you get, if you're going to fish the sunny side of a seawall, and it's actually better than a mangrove edge, because the mangrove edge doesn't have that concrete to radiate the warmth out. So if you've got a dock with concrete pilings, a concrete seawall, those are going to be more of a fish attractant this time of year. In the summertime, you always want to look towards the natural mangrove shorelines. The fish will be hanging out underneath the mangroves in the shade, no concrete to get the water even hotter. But in the wintertime, it's exactly opposite. Those man-made things are a big deal for fishing. So what I had him do was literally just stick your fishing pole in the water to see how deep it is. Wait till your tip hits the bottom, and then count how many guides. And then make your leader so it's about 3 inches shorter than that. Put a bobber on, and if it's a very slow tide, you don't need a weight. If it's a little heavier tide, what you want to do is put a large split shot about 6 inches up over the hook, and then make about 3 inches longer, because I want my bait about 3 inches off the bottom. So now I can just drop that in the water next to the dock and start feeding line out. If you're a little more impatient, it's kind of nice to be able to cast out towards the middle of the canal, then let the bobber go over towards the edge. And as it gets within 2-3 feet of the seawall or the shoreline, just start feeding line out and let the tide take it away if you move. But go about 2 feet and stop. Let it sit there for a little bit. Go another 2 feet, stop it, and let it sit. So I'll open the bail, take the line, and go from the reel up to about the first guide and close the bail again. I don't want to go too far at once. I don't want it to just drift through. These fish are cold. They got to have time. Okay, there it is. Do I really want to eat? You know, what do I want to do? I'm going to lay up. Give them time to make up their minds. So you want to float down current on the canal about 2 feet at a time. Don't try and go the whole way. Now, I'm going to say shrimp, live or frozen, would probably be the best thing to put underneath that.
I'm going to agree with that. You know, this time of year, shrimp become more abundant in the harbor and the canals anyway, and the fish want to feed on those. Plus, it's a little bit easier for them to digest because of them being cold-blooded.
Now, I'm going to say, you've talked before last winter about why fish eat shrimp in the winter and why they don't eat bait fish as much, and it's sometimes the food can rot in their stomach.
Yeah.
Because they're not warm enough.
Yeah. Yeah, any cold-blooded animal digests its food basically by fermentation. And the more dense it is, the heavier the bone structure is, the longer it's going to take for them to break that down. And when you're dealing with a shrimp, which is just a small, thin exoskeleton animal with no internal skeletons, it's much quicker for them to break that down and digest it. So if you get these fronts that happen to come in with a lot of strength to them, and those fish haven't moved because they're comfortable in that spot, it could potentially kill them after a couple of days of having a big food item sitting in their stomach.
So this is why when we tell people at this time of year, you're going to catch 10 fish on a shrimp for every one fish you're going to catch on a whitebait. Now, as the water warms up, those things will reverse. You're going to catch 10 fish in a whitebait to what you're going to catch on a shrimp. Whitebait will work all year. Shrimp will work all year. But the more you're inconsistent with what you throw, the more consistent you'll catch. So this time of year, shrimp is your best bait. You will catch way more fish on shrimp than you will on bait fish. Now, sometimes even by the afternoon, the bait fish will start working good. Later in the afternoon, say 3-4 o'clock, because the water's a little warmer, the fish are more likely to take a chance on eating a bait fish and being able to digest the bones, the skull, the ribs, the scales, and all that. But when it's chilly out the way it is right now, they know they can digest a shrimp faster, so they're much more likely to eat a shrimp.
No, absolutely. And here's another thing. You were telling me about telling the people about the canals radiating the heat with the seawalls and stuff. Now, I taught this to a customer yesterday, and they flipped their lid because they'd never thought about it. But if you're going to fish in a canal system or even on the Peace River, what area is going to get warmer the fastest? You taught me this 20-some-odd years ago.
I'm ready to relearn it.
The north side. the north-facing edge of the harbor, the river, or your canal systems are always going to heat up a little bit faster
because of the southern exposure.
Exactly. So if you want to get really meticulous about trying to find some of these fish a little bit earlier in the day or later in the day, try to look for those north-facing canals.
Well, the north side.
North side of the canal.
South-facing north sides.
South-facing north sides,
yes. If you don't know what that is and you're not familiar with the area where the north and south is, because not all of us are.
No,
I remember being up at the oil spill, and for me, all these years, the Gulf has been west of us. It got me turned around because the Gulf was south of me there.
I can see
so
that.
So every time I think I'm going one way, I'm going the opposite way. And so if you're not familiar, the sunny side, if there's shadows on it, it's not going to be as much fishing. Shade is your enemy, not your friend right now.
Right.
And at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, getting out on the flats, let's say you're on the east side of the harbor. Now, you have Shaw Harbor proper outside of the sandbar. Behind the sandbar, you're in the flats. It's a different, whole different harbor than outside of the sandbar. Once you're back there, the water's shallower, slower moving, because it's harder for that water to get past the sandbars out to the harbor. So even the tide there is a little less. So in the morning, I'm going to be looking for dark grass, shallow water, in the sun.
Okay, yeah, and I would agree with that. I'm also probably going to still look for like maybe a deeper spot close by that area. Like
yeah,
if there happens
trough,
to be
a
little trough or an entrance to a creek or something like that.
Now, keep in mind, when we're talking about troughs, holes, potholes, stuff like that, we're talking about areas that are 4 to 10 inches deeper than the rest of the area. Let's say you're a slot-sized redfish. If you laid that fish on its belly, sitting upright, you know, like looking at it on a table on its belly with its back up, it's less than 6 inches high.
Yeah.
So if you're in a 4, 5, 6 inch depression, you're completely hidden from view from other predators. That's why fish tend to go to these low spots, because a predator looking across the flat isn't going to see them down in there. If you're a 6 foot person and you're standing in a 4 foot hole, you're not hidden.
Right.
You're a 6 foot person standing in a 6 foot 2 inch hole, you're hidden.
Right.
So if you're 4 inches tall in a 5 inch depression, you're hidden.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it goes. So Robert's right, those little depressions, but with dark grass, if it's a bright sandy bottom, they're not going to be in it. It's reflecting the heat, not absorbing the heat. That dark grass is absorbing the heat. So that's a little better thing about that. Pompano.
Been getting a lot of reports on Pompano. A lot of people were, you know, we had the Thanksgiving last week, so there was a lot of extra people here, and they were taking advantage of the beaches and nice weather. So I had a lot of people that were fishing, you know, Boca Grande Pass, even up in Venice, several of the other beaches, and catching some good pompano. And then even up there in Inglewood, throughout the whole intercoastal, a lot of people were just up there boating and fishing and talking about either seeing the pompano skipping behind them or stopping and catching them. Even a few people caught them at the Tom Adams Bridge fishing the pilings while looking for sheep's head. And then I had a couple guys report some pompano at the Causeway Bridge going on to Boca Grande. So, they, you know, they've been in some of that deeper water and along that shallow water out along the beaches. And the biggest one I heard of was like 22, 23 inches, which is a really big pompano.
Yeah, pompano, it's amazing, though. But if you've ever freshwater fished, you can catch a smallmouth bass, a little one, and it presents itself during the fight like a much larger fish. And pompano are similar because they're a very thin, very tall fish. If you were to put your hand out straight up, your fingers together, that's more the shape. They're not a cylindrical fish. They're a taller, flatter fish, and they try to get that side towards you. They're using their tall, big surface area of their body to fight against you. So a 20-inch pompano is going to fight more like about a 30-inch, like, say, walleye or something.
Right.
It presents itself as a much bigger fish. RJ, how do you determine pompano permit?
Boy, I've never been good at that.
Okay, neither has anybody else. That's why I figured I'd throw it your way.
Yeah, you usually get the FWC guy to say, am I getting a ticket for this one or not?
Robert?
It's one of the few things that the FWC actually was kind of nice about to an extent. You know, the
it
bag
is so difficult to tell them apart. Yeah.
Yeah, the bag limit is different, but I think the size limit starts at the same, but there is a slot limit, no keeping so many above. But the easiest way, honestly, on a permit, you know, it's got a dorsal fin and it's got an anal fin that's almost straight below it. And those are actually longer, but unless you have two laying next to each other.
You're talking about the permit have that?
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty tricky to tell the difference because you almost have to have two of them laying there to see the difference.
Now, if you're in the Gulf, I'm going to say quick reference point. Permit are normally grays and black.
Right.
And very seldom present much yellow in color. A pompano could have more yellow in it. Now, this is not going to hold true if you catch them in Charlotte Harbor or any of the brackish water areas because the coloring's completely different. But let's say you're out along the beaches, along Middle Beach, somewhere between, Placida and Venice, along the beaches there. Chances are the pompano will have some yellow on it.
Yeah, and it's usually kind of more on like the throat or the breast of the fish. It won't be on the tail because some people get that confused with the jack.
Right. There's no yellow on the tail of a pompano.
Right.
So there's a little quick hint for you.
What are they hitting on at this time of year? What's the ideal bait?
A lot of people are catching them on shrimp. You know, a few people were also using the banana jigs or the crazy jigs and doing extremely well on those. Those seem to be the guys that were fishing mostly around the bridges. But the people that were shore-based fishing were all pretty much catching them all on shrimp.
Now, two ways to do this. If you've got two people, my best suggestion is, one, just like you were trout fishing, putting it out under a popping cork and having the shrimp down about 2-3 feet below the popping cork and popping it, and then the other person fishing either on the bottom or very close to the bottom.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good way to do it.
Because these fish will bottom feed, without a doubt. They go down and pick food off the bottom constantly. But sometimes they're just swimming through, and they're not really in the feeding thing. They're just kind of passing by, and if there's a shrimp hanging there in the water, hey, why not? Easy lunch.
Yeah.
They're used to getting their main food off the bottom, but they're more than happy to pick something up through the middle of the water. Problem is, you don't know which one they're going to be. So if you've got two people fishing them, I would do one under a float and one down on the bottom. Now, the problem with people on the bottom is they tend to use pompano rigs. And a pompano rig has a sinker on the bottom, and then you come up a few inches, there's a hook coming off the side, you go up about a foot over that, and there's another hook off of that, and then a swivel. And so when they're holding it, sinker on the bottom, the swivel up, and the two baits coming off the side, they think, well, one's on the bottom and one's up by the top. And I have a tendency, when people tell me this, to throw it on the floor and say, which one's floating? And they look over there, well, it's on the bottom. I said, well, is it different in the water? When you throw that, you know, rig out, they're both laying on the bottom. He says, well, no, this one's standing up. I said, how does it stand up? What magical force could make that stand up unless you're directly above it, fishing from a pier straight down or from a boat straight down, where you're literally holding it up? The only magical thing that can do that is a tiny bobber. Not enough to lift the weight off the bottom. You want enough weight with your sinker to be able to pull that bobber till the sinker hits the bottom. And then that little bobber will float up. Keep the one right by the bottom, and the other will be up in the middle of the water. But a tiny little float, not heavy enough to float your sinker, but just heavy enough to lift the bait up. Now that will stand up and do what you think it'll do. If you do not add that bobber, you've got a double bottom rig. They're both laying on the bottom. It is not standing up. It's impossible. I don't care how much, you know, SpongeBob told you, oh, this'll work. It's impossible. because it's out in front of you. It's laying down. Let the bobber drift it up, and you're all good, and everything works. And we're talking about taking a 39-cent bobber, cutting it in half so you don't have that much flotation, putting it on your line right where your swivel is. And that'll float the top of it up, and your bait works, and you got an actual pompano rig.
I like that. You know, I never gave that much thought.
Is this also a good time of year to be using an attractant on your shrimp?
I think that's any time of year. Yeah. But I'm not a big one for adding shrimp flavor to a shrimp. It's supposed to already smell like a shrimp.
Yeah, but I was thinking that some type of oily attractant, you know, because the fish are relatively dormant, especially in the canal fishing. You're adding an extra component for the fish to be attracted or at least enticed to come out and eat it as opposed to just kind of see it go by.
Now, you could think of that smell, added smell thing, as like a chum influence.
A chum influence, yes.
So what I would do is, if I'm using a live shrimp, I might, like coat its tail with that. Because if you had something like Procure, that would actually wash off a little bit. That would intensify the shrimp smell. But the one thing is, if you're fishing with shrimp, you want to use a shrimp scent. It's really critical. It doesn't sound like much, because I use the coffee scent on all my lures. Because now my boat smells like coffee with cream and sugar instead of dead fish and dead crabs and anise oil. For years, my boat always stunk like dead bait. Now it smells like coffee or cream and sugar. Same thing I have in front of me right now. But when you're fishing with shrimp, let's picture this. You're walking down the street, going along, da-da-da, you know, nice day, this is nice. And all of a sudden you start smelling somebody cooking a steak on the grill. You know that flavor just permeates, or they're doing ribs, right? Does that make you want a hot dog?
No.
You want a steak. You're smelling that steak. You can, that scent, the aroma, it's just making you nuts. Your mouth starts salivating, and you're thinking, wow, would I really like a steak? At what point in that picture does it say, oh, I love the way that steak smells. I want a salad, or I want a hot dog.
Salad is the good one, yeah.
If you're fishing with shrimp for bait, make sure when you're adding the scent to it that it's a shrimp scent. Because then the fish down there are going to go, wow, that shrimp, it smells good. I think, man, I gotta get me a shrimp.
Yeah, I got to get me a shrimp. Oh, look.
Yeah, look, there's a shrimp. But if you've got menhaden oil on it.
Right.
And the shrimp down, the fish is down current of it going, boy, that menhaden, that really smells good. I'm looking for, you know, I want a menhaden. And he comes up, well, there's a shrimp, but where's that menhaden, man? I'm literally looking for the menhaden. It's what I've never understood about guys fishing sharks. They use cow blood. Well, if you're going to use cow blood for chum, you got to use like cow liver or some type of cow part for bait, because that's what they came there expecting. If you're using cow blood for chum and you using fish for bait, really? Yeah. I don't see, you know, it's going to work because they're in the area, they'll probably pick it up, but you're going to get less. So yeah. If you're in the canal, shrimp is the best bait. If you're going to add flavor to it, put shrimp flavor on it.
And that, boys and girls, was our segment known as Common Good Sense.
Yes. Yeah, all we need, well, I can sub for Oscar the Grouch, and then we got the Snuffleupagus over here. So,
seeing one thing that I like to do, another thing you taught me a long time ago is, obviously, I mean, I'm a smoker, so my hands probably smell like cigarette, but I'm constantly touching other things, so when I tie my leader on, and especially with natural bait, I'll actually take that Procure and I'll wipe it down my leader after tying it on and coat that just to help obscure or try to eliminate any of my human scent that I've come in contact with, especially since you lick the knots to keep the friction down to make them tighter, you know, all that's there. So that little bit of scent on the line can help quite a bit with bringing in some more activity to your
thing. You have to be careful about is when I put something like Procure on, it's a really super sticky, nasty gel.
Oh, yes, it is.
And you put a little bit on the shrimp tail if you want to enhance that shrimp. But if you touch your finger a tiny bit on the gel, Don't rub any on your finger. Just a little tiny bit. Then smear that tiny bit between your thumb and your forefinger and smear that on. And I always put it on my trigger finger, my index finger. That's the one I cast with. So that helps keep me from putting the human scent on the line every time I cast. But if you put too much on, you'll have fish chewing your leader. All you're doing is trying to get rid of, mask the human smell. So it's the tiniest little bit. Keep in mind, dogs can follow you around the room by your skin cells falling off on the ground. So it's that little tiny minute bit just to get the human smell off. Now, ladies, you don't have to do this. You don't have to add scent to your, you know, cover up your human smell on there, because we're guys. And like the old deodorant commercial, strong enough for a man but made for a woman, because the pH is different. Your body chemistry is different. Guys have been killing everything on the planet for probably a million years now. The testosterone, the male smell of humans, that's danger to every creature on the planet. But women are not. The female scent, while you're not a fish attractant, you're not a fish repellent. So a woman can simply rub her hand, as long as you don't have perfumes and sunscreens and all that on, just a clean hand from a woman, up and down the line, over the knots, wherever a man has touched your stuff, you rub that off and you can get rid of his smell, add your smell on, and just put the scent on the bait. But that will eliminate any of it, because now it's not a fish attractant, but it's not a fish repellent, simply by a woman touching it.
Nice.
I think it's one of the reasons women outfish us. If they tie their own leader, put their own hooks on, you know, if they're doing the stuff themselves, that's a distinct advantage right off the get-go.
Yeah, yeah. Usually doesn't make us feel very good.
You know, and children, before they hit puberty, are fish attractants.
Really?
Yeah, it's absolutely, because, and this sounds cruel and unusual, and, you know, cover your ears if you're sensitive. Everything on the world wants to eat babies, whether it's baby birds, baby rabbits, baby whatever, because they taste good and they don't fight back real hard. So anything with that baby smell will attract any major predator. And that's whether it's a human animal, an animal, or a fish animal. Babies don't fight back, and they're good to eat. And so it makes them the best bait. So, you know, I do not recommend taking your kid and use a scent or something. You don't get stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reality is, that's reality. That's real world stuff. It's not, the animals are down there having tea party stuff. Cold water.
That's not a Disney movie.
Yeah, well, I won't even speak their forbidden name. I don't like them. Cold water. Would you classify this as cold or chilly, RJ?
I think we're chilly right now. It's not actually that cold. I was talking to Robert before about all the armored catfish dying when the water gets cold enough. I haven't seen them floating in the Myakka yet, so.
If it gets cold enough, it'll kill them off.
Yeah.
You know, because they are a tropical species, but they manage to get into some of their burrows and dens on the side of the river where it tends to be a little bit more insulated.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get any of them that get stuck outside of that or venture out in it, they'll definitely start croaking.
You can cough on this show. We do it all the time.
And for me, it's definitely cold. You know, I'm not a big fan of the cold at all.
So the water's like 62 to 65 degrees back on the flats?
Yeah, that's what a couple of people have said yesterday and today.
See, this is right on the cusp, because RJ's right and Robert's right. Below 60, we classify as cold.
Right.
Once you're below 60, but we're right on the edge of it. And this cloudy day today, I think, is going to push it over. Because from 60 to 70 degrees, that's chilly. Under 60 is cold. Over 70 is perfect. Above 85 is stupid hot, and the fish slow down and don't do anything either. So, you know, 70 to 80, perfect water temperature. 60 to 70, chilly. Anything under 60, flat out cold. The fish have a much harder time in it because they're just not used to it.
It's about 55 degrees where snook start to go dormant to the point where they're almost dead.
Yeah, they pretty much go to sleep at 50s. By 48 degrees, they're in real trouble.
Okay.
So, and all they have to do is be 4 feet below the surface, and our water's really not going to hit that.
Right.
But if they're above 4 feet, if they're 1, 2, 3 feet of water, they can easily be in big trouble. So, let's see. We are doing a sale at Fish and Frings.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got Akuma at like 40% off, TFO at 50% off. We're doing a bunch of other stuff. Each week we've had different specials. They're going to have, it's for the month of December.
Yeah, just kind of a Christmas deal, kind of get people excited for the holidays.
One guy bought 15 rods.
Yeah.
Another guy bought like 12. I mean, they're vying for how many rods they can buy in one crack. But
it's just a good way to get people excited about the holidays and get some things going. It's pretty cool.
That's what they're doing. They're going to be able to give people $100, $130 fishing poles at a reasonable price. You know, get some $180 poles in there. And, you know, they're giving them away mostly. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But don't usually talk about sales, but I'm going to throw that one in. It kind of brings me to a different point. If you are an exceptionally good fisherman, if you're a pro angler, if you fished all the time for years and you know everything about what you want and what you're getting, you go for those sales. You go for closeouts. You go for discounted stuff on sale. That's because you know what you're buying. You can buy on the internet. It really doesn't matter. Once you're a professional and you're really, really good, you know what the stuff is already. You know what you're buying. You know what you're getting. And if you can save some money, okay. The less you know about fishing, the least experienced you are, stay away from cheap deals, closeouts, stay away from sale stuff. Because it's usually not the stuff that's selling. It's usually not the stuff that's going to work good. Because if it's a really good item that everybody uses all the time, it's not on sale.
Yeah.
It's not discounted. It's not cheap. Go and find out what actually works. If you bought a $20 rod that was normally $200, and you got it for $20 and it won't do what you want it to do, you just wasted $20. So you didn't save $100, you threw away $20. You need to go and talk to people who know what they're doing. Go to your tackle shop. You've got a good one in Northport here. We're down in Port Charlotte at Fish and Frank's. Go to the tackle store and ask them what's actually working. And we had a guy in recently. He bought a $20 rod and reel combo from us and came back in, was so mad because, you know, I can catch, you know, this is just fine. I don't need any more than this. I don't fish. I don't do any of that because, you know, I'm just getting started. I'm a beginner. Just give me a $20 combo. Well, he goes out. And he's got the line up under the spool, tangled up. What was he telling? He said to Steve,
You did this. You messed this up on me.
You did this. You messed it up.
And he's like, no, I spooled it up, but I didn't do this. As he's taking the spool off and untangling about 15 feet of line that was around the shaft under the spool.
Modern spinning reels are done with what's called a skirted spool. If you go back prior to 1964, spinning reels had an exterior skirt on them that was part of the rotor. The spool itself was more like actually a bobbin. You know, it was just a, I don't know, what do you describe that as?
A bobbin's a pretty good description.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they wrap wire on. It's just a bottom and a top with the thing in the middle, but there was no skirt on it. So the line was always getting underneath the spool and wrapping around the shaft of the reel. They even used to put pipe cleaner around the outside of it to try and keep the line from being able to get down in there to fill that space up. Mitchell 300s, actually, the old ones have pipe cleaner around the outside.
Yeah, I was just about to say, my old Mitchell Garcia 300 was famous for eating line on me.
And in 1964, Daiwa came up with what was a skirted spool, Pen SS. The SS is not super sport, it's not spiffy, spantastic. It's skirted spool, because it was one of the biggest things in history for the spinning reel. Because with that skirt on the outside and it rode up and down over the rotor, it's highly unlikely to get the line to go up behind, underneath, and then wrap around the main shaft. But for some reason or other, when people are first getting started, it seems to be pretty common. And they can't figure it out. Well, you have a nut or a lever on the end of your spool, and that's what we call the drag knob, the drag cap. And if your reel is not reeling right and the line won't come off or go back on the reel and everything's kind of foobarred at this point, find the drag cap. It's on the very front of the reel. Lefty-loosey. You just turn it just like you would turn off, turn left, get it off. When you take that off, set it down, and then gently, very gently, start to pull the spool away from the reel off of the shaft. Now, if you find your line going underneath there and wrapped around like it's got Huggies on, it's just around and around and around the pole there, and you look at all that, you go, oh, well, that wasn't the guy at the bait shop who put your line on. That was you reeling in loose or slack line. When line's really loose around the spool, it's just laying in globs there, and then you start cranking, and it just grabs it and puts it wherever. So when you pull that out, you look, see the line's all tangled up, just take a knife or scissors and start cutting away. And as soon as you get it all off, and make sure you get all of the line off of that shaft. There'll be a shaft going in and out. There's a little sprocket on there, a couple little washers. Make sure you don't lose any of those. Sometimes you can simply pull those off and pull the line out from without having to unwrap or cut it off, but I don't recommend it. You didn't know enough about the reel to stop it from getting tangled up. You darn sure don't know enough about the reel to put it back together properly. So just use a knife or scissors, cut the line off, get everything clear, and then put it back together, put the spool on gently, and it does. Best way to do it is like you're putting a combination lock on. Spin it one way, spin it the other, until it falls down where it's going to go. If you force it into place, you're going to bend the little clicker for your drag alarm. It's the little drag clicker that goes tick, 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 tick. That is easily bent if you force it on. Or you can actually warp the washers that do your drag. Yeah. You don't force this. Just spin it back and forth like you were putting a combination lock, trying to enter a combination. A little to the right, a little to the left. It'll fall into place. Then put the drag cap back on, tighten it up, just enough so the fish can pull some line but not break the line. And tie everything back on and go again.
And just for a safety note, make sure you do it inside, sitting in the bottom of the boat or going up into your porch or somewhere, not doing it while standing on your dock.
I think you should do it while you're standing on the dock with the reel on the rail, with the spool over the water, so that when you do all that and everything falls in the water, you have to come down and buy another rod and reel.
Right. Exactly.
It makes perfectly good sense to me.
Job security. I like it.
Yeah. It's a way for me to make money. Yeah. Right. If you do it somewhere safe where you don't lose any of the parts, I'm not going to make any extra money. So how's that a good thing?
That's right. The other tip for a beginner with a spinning reel is keep the anti-reverse lever on so that you can't turn the reel backwards. Because if you turn the reel backwards, that's another great way to fill the inside of the shaft up with line.
But it's the only way I can reel it when I'm holding it upside down.
Exactly right. You don't hold it upside down. But what happens in the heat of the moment,
you got a fish. That's the way I fish.
You got a fish on now, right, and you start cranking the reel in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and the handle falls off. Yeah. The line's all tangled up.
Yeah, put the anti-reverse click on and leave it super glue it down.
A lot of manufacturers are just not doing the anti-reverse switch for two reasons. One, it's more stuff to put on that you really don't need anyway. Long gone are the days where you have to reel backwards for the fish. And two, it's more money. And every little bit they don't have to put in there is something they don't have to charge for. And it actually works pretty good. So, you know, spinning reels have come a long ways. In 1964, Daiwa invents the skirted spool. In 1986, Toyo Shimano was at a casting competition in Europe and found them cross-wrapping the line on their reels by hand. They'd take all the line off and by hand load it back on, so the line was being loaded in a cross pattern or an X pattern, allowing the line to fly off much faster. So what they did was make the spool a little longer, a little shallower, and then cut the worm gear so the spool went out at one speed and back a slightly different speed, thereby cross-wrapping the line. It was called the old Aero system. It's still one of the best systems ever invented. And people use it all the time now. And Penn has a reel out. It's called the Slammer Long Cast. Isn't it the Slammer Long Cast? Or is it the... It's one of them.
Well, Conflict and Slammer both make the long cast.
Yeah, the Conflict and the Slammer. And Americans don't buy them because they don't have any understanding on what it is. They don't know.
Yeah.
But if I was buying a 6,000 reel for tarpon, I want that long cast spool. It's got an unbelievable cross wrap to the line, cast farther. The drag will not hang up because the line is not able to bury itself at all. It's got an amazing cross-wrap capabilities. Does it look stupid? Absolutely. It's one of the most ridiculous-looking things you're going to see because you're not European.
Yeah.
This is what was started over in Europe for casting competitions. Nobody in their right mind is going to go to a casting competition with a short spool.
Well, that's the first tarpon I ever caught and landed was on a long cast spool that you...
Yeah, it was on that old Daiwa.
Yeah, you brought it from Europe, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that reel was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I still have them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I like for tarpon is old long cast I brought over from Europe. Now I can get them from Penn. I'm going to try that Penn out this year.
Yeah.
If I can get out there and go fishing. How much time
amen to that, brother.
We got 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow. And I'm almost out of stuff to say.
That's not possible. Give me a break. Nobody out there believes any of that statement.
It's all you guys. I'm done. I got nothing left to talk about.
What about sheep's head?
Well, go ahead.
You know, sheep's head, a lot of people are excited about them, and with this cooler weather, they've actually been pretty active, and they're starting to move into the upper harbor now. For the last couple of weeks, they've been predominantly out there along the beaches, the passes, and around the Placida area. And they still are in really good numbers, but we're starting to see better numbers up in Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, around the shacks. A few guys have been starting to catch them at the Alligator Creek Reef. And yesterday a guy was in talking about he actually caught a few nice ones at El Jobin and saw several other people catching them there too. So they're finally starting to move in at least more fishable numbers rather than just the occasional one.
All right, Robert, number one place for sheephead right now.
I'm still going to go to Placida as my first choice.
Number two?
El Jobin.
Three?
Probably the Tom Adams or the Anger Pier.
Okay. Now, because we do have all these pop-up red tides going on, and they're like if you go to a city and somebody pulls up with a van and sells something for, you know, an hour in a parking space and then disappears again, that's the way the red tide's going. But the two most common sights you're going to see is not dead floating fish, really, but if you're in an area and the red tide just got there, the easiest way to tell is from mullet and catfish.
Yeah.
Now, mullet, we think, go to the red tide because they eat shrimp, they eat fish, they eat algae, they eat bugs, they eat worms, they eat vegetable matter, but they do like eating algae.
Yeah.
And the red tide, I think, is something they have a hard time resisting. Here you have this heavy algae concentration. And the mullet go, wow, food! And they go into this red tide thinking they're going to get dinner out of it. Let's face it, a mullet isn't very bright.
No.
All right? So mullet will go in there, we think, to eat the red tide. Well, as the mullets start to die because they're in feasting on red tide, what's the one thing that is attracted by dead more than anything else?
Catfish.
Catfish. So as soon as anything starts to die in there, they're acting weird and spinning and being suffocated from the red tide. That attracts the catfish. So the catfish goes, oh, look at all this food. So they go into the red tide area because there's dead bait, dead mullet, whatever. So the first thing in is always the mullet. The next thing in is always the catfish. And keep in mind, if you're seeing floating fish, chances are those fish died a day, 2 days before you were there. And just because there's dead fish in an area doesn't mean there's red tide. They could have floated in with the tide, with the wind. It doesn't mean they died there. It just means they floated there.
Yeah.
So if your throat's not scratchy, you're not coughing, there's no red tide there. So easiest, bottom line way
to go. So real quick, we got 1 minute left. It's cold water. What's the best fish for cold water if we're going to come to Florida and go fishing? What are we targeting?
I'm going to say sheep's head and pompano would be my two choices.
Right, yeah.
At least this week while it's starting to slowly warm back up.
Best food fish, sheephead and pompano.
Yes.
I'm going to go with the redfish are still thick, and you got to let them go. But in this cold weather, when you get them to bite, fish slow, fish still, but it's on like Donkey Kong. A lot of energy in this cold water.
Yeah, they do like this cooler water, or cold water.
Well, they fight longer, but it takes them longer to bite.
Yeah.
But once they're into it, it's like, okay. So, anyway, this is Fish and Frank. We're going to call this Week in Fishing, or in other words, a Wackadoo's Guide to Angling Knowledge.
Oh, I like that.
Robert nice. In the chair across from me, RJ in command and control, my wife Terry sitting over in the corner going, I'm really with this guy? So, see you next week.